You're listening to SBS News.
The Greater Western Sydney region is a diverse one, a melting pot of different ethnicities and home to the most multicultural suburbs in the country, with a large migrant and predominantly working class community. One such suburb is Penrith, which in January of 2020, during Australia's most scorching summer on record, was registered as the hottest place on earth, reaching a high of 48.9 degrees Celsius and breaking records that had gone back 80 years. Dr. Kim Liu, a general practitioner who's based in the nearby suburb of Riverston, remembers the awful predicaments this put some of her patients, like mother of two, Rebecca, in.
So she had a newborn baby and it was so hot because it was over 40 degrees and there was smoke everywhere for 80 days. So she said it was so hard in the house because Australian houses aren't made to prevent smoke coming in. She had a tiny newborn baby. You go inside the house was smoky and hot. Outside was smoky. And there was really, if you live in Western Sydney, your relatives live in Western Sydney, there's nowhere to escape. So she ended up going to the shopping centre during the day.
What Dr. Liu is describing are the realities of a warming planet, but realities which are made much worse by Greater Western Sydney's urban ecology and infrastructure. The unique geographical factors of GWS make it particularly susceptible to heat, with temperatures often between 8 and 10.5 degrees hotter than eastern Sydney. Hot air mass comes in over the mountain range and then pushes into the valley that this region encompasses. Too far from the coast to receive any cooling sea breeze, heat is then trapped within these western neighbourhoods with nowhere to go. Dr. Sebastian Fauch is an associate professor in urban studies at Western Sydney University. He points to both the geography and flawed urban design of the area that are exacerbating the climate change struggles of Western Sydney residents.
The sea breeze is one important aspect. The general geomorphology of the Sydney Basin plays into this effect. And then, of course, we are accelerating the heat issue by the way we are building in Western Sydney, which is flat and wide, car dependency, roads everywhere, dark materials, heat absorbing and re-emitting built form, which is, of course, a big problem when we come from a relatively green area into a very grey area now.
For those unfamiliar with the term, the grey infrastructure that Dr. Fauch is referring to is housing, roads and businesses, with much of the green space eradicated from many areas. The planning in Western Sydney, he says, is a multi-layered disaster, with housing estates encompassing hundreds of homes crammed close together. They capture and store heat, which then radiate from one neighbour to the next.
The interesting bit is that really for many, many years, anything that was built, not even in Western Sydney, I would say throughout Australia, has not been built with heat mitigation in your mind. It was cheap or it was beautiful or it was functional, but it was not related to heat safety. And that is now something that we have to slowly change because it is getting hotter. Extreme temperatures are going up and we will need to protect ourselves against extreme heat much better than we did in the past.
During hot days in Western Sydney, playgrounds without shade will most likely sit empty, with play equipment too hot to touch, let alone sit on. And things don't get much better in the classroom.
You see throughout the summer in your classes, no one is paying attention. Your paper gets wet from sweat dripping, like it's actively distracting from learning. And I've heard from other students about times that, you know, they've been lightheaded. They have to lie on the floor to stay conscious in class. That's an actual problem that students are facing, staying conscious in class.
That's Ian Cholker, a 17-year-old student at Springwood High School, located in Greater Sydney's Lower Blue Mountains region. While his school's gates are towered over by the area's native gum trees, most of its classrooms are unshaded and exposed to the baking sun each afternoon.
Our buildings at our school, they don't have proper insulation. So they're built basically as these big brick blocks without shading. And the sun hits those bricks throughout the day. And then into the afternoon, that heat gets radiated back into us, basically like a solar oven. So we're constantly facing this heat no matter where we are in the school.
As the number of hot days increases and with no air conditioning in most of Springwood's classrooms, Ian has begun to see how climate change is having a significant impact on students' learning.
We did a study as to what to learn over the summer of 2018 to 2019, when I was going into year nine. And we put 16 temperature sensors in our classrooms and four in the grounds of our schools, in our school. And we found that our classrooms exceeded the optimal learning temperature that most, you know, classrooms should be at. The optimal learning temperature is 22 to 24 degrees Celsius. And we were reaching temperatures of 36 degrees, 37 degrees in our classrooms. So, you know, completely unacceptable.
Now, to put this into perspective, 37 degrees is the temperature that people practice a sweltering class of hot yoga at. While hot summer classrooms have been an age-old problem for Australian students, there's no denying the growing rate of extreme weather that Ian and his generation are facing. Dr. Liu, who grew up in Greater Western Sydney and has been doing house calls for over 30 years, says temperatures in the region are accelerating at an alarming rate.
So even as a kid, I remember there were heat waves. But as a doctor and doing house calls during heat waves, I never used to work where it was smoky and 48, 49 degrees. Like, I've never struck temperatures at that level 30 years ago.
Stress on the body caused by these extreme heat waves can exacerbate existing health conditions and chronic illnesses. They also significantly increase the number of people needing to access emergency and medical services for a range of health conditions. And the repercussions aren't just physical, as students like Ian can attest to.
Studies have shown that temperatures at this level can reduce educational outcomes. It can be hard for teachers to be teaching a class full of sweaty kids. And it's also hard for the students who are there sitting in class with, you know, sweat dripping off their faces onto their workbooks.
Ian and his classmates founded an initiative called Too Hot to Learn and invited scientists from Western Sydney University to come and measure temperatures at Springwood High School. Using the data that students collected, scientists found the classroom air temperatures at Springwood exceeded the optimal learning threshold for 60% of the summer. Following on from this, Ian's school applied to be considered eligible for a state initiative called Cooler Classrooms, designed to provide schools that needed it with funding for sustainable air conditioning, heating and ventilation systems. But after 2 years of radio silence, the state government denied Springwood High's application.
We've gotten to this point where a lot of our classrooms are air-conditioned. We air-conditioned our hottest classrooms based on the results of our study. But the state government didn't pay for that. We had to actively allocate our school's budget towards air conditioning. That took, you know, a lot of conversations with the school executive and the PNC to get that happening, because the state government ignored us.
We asked to speak to the state education minister, Sarah Mitchell, to discuss why Ian's school had been denied funding when schools in other regions of New South Wales with much cooler temperatures were given grants. But she was unavailable for comment. We instead spoke to her government's head of school infrastructure, Anthony Manning. He headed up the Cooler Classrooms project.
In the first wave, which was kind of the main announcement, every school that applied got the funding. So essentially that kind of used up kind of that phase of the funding that was available to us, and that was the commitment around the 900 schools. So it was effectively every school that applied, regardless of where they were. So some of the schools that applied in round two didn't actually apply as part of round one. And so the round two process was then commenced, and we've been working our way through those.
Many argue that extreme heat in Australia is becoming a socio-economic issue, with poorer communities, like many in the suburbs of Western Sydney, suffering with weakening and ageing infrastructures. Dr. Fauch says that climate change is one of many issues that affects less advantaged communities in a more profound way.
The socioeconomics are clear. The statistics have been out for many, many years that Western Sydney is disadvantaged when it comes to disposable income, when it comes to public health and other issues.
Social isolation and poverty only increase the health risks posed by extreme heat. There's also a growing number of people experiencing energy poverty, where people can't afford the cost to keep their homes adequately cooled. Dr. Liu has many patients who either can't afford to run their air conditioner or don't have access to one to begin with.
So this little family doesn't have an air conditioner. They have a floor fan that they can turn on, but they can't afford it. They're renting. And so the landlord is not putting on an air conditioner. The place is falling apart. And really, it's not really fit for humans to live in where they live, but they at the moment don't have choice.
The international organisation Human Rights Watch spotlights and advocates for people who are suffering abuse in over 90 countries worldwide. They recently commissioned a photo essay which explores the dramatic effects of climate change on Western Sydney and its inhabitants. Sophie McNeil, a former journalist, was a researcher on the project. She argues that governments have a human rights obligation to protect their populations from the foreseeable harms of heatwave, which are exacerbated by climate change.
It's really alarming to hear all of these stories of people in Western Sydney who can't afford, you know, to use their air conditioning when it gets really hot. What we really want to highlight here is that extreme heat is not something that everyone can afford to cope with, you know. And when you have these heat waves, which are exacerbated by climate change, then it really is incumbent on local government and state government to come up with plans. You know, they have a human rights responsibility to protect the most vulnerable people in our community when you have these extremely high temperatures for days and weeks on end.
Sophie says most Australians aren't aware how serious the consequences are for those who are most vulnerable within the community.
I don't think Australians would be aware that heat waves have caused more deaths in this country in the past 200 years than any other natural hazard. And, you know, there's so many vulnerable groups that are really at risk when you have heat waves and really high temperatures. So you've got kids, you've got older people, pregnant women, people with disabilities, people with chronic health conditions. And extreme heat can just really exacerbate the stress on the bodies of all of those groups.
It all provides an alarming insight into what the future may hold. Tina Quinn, SBS News.